At 2:10 that afternoon, the bomb finally went off. God bless the living, God bless the dead. Willie turns the page. Here is a headline from the Oklahoma City Oklahoman, April of 1971. Three radicals killed in roadblock shootout. Big fish may have escaped by minutes, says FBI SAC Thurman. The big fish were John and Sally McBride, Charlie Duck Golden, the elusive Raymond Fiegler, and Carol, the remaining members of the MSP, in other words. The McBrides and Golden died in Los Angeles 6 months later, someone in the house still shooting and tossing grenades even as the place burned down. Neither Fiegler nor Carol was in the burned-out shell, but the police techs found large quantities of spilled blood, which had been typed AB positive, a rare blood type, Carol Gerber's blood type. Dead or alive, alive or dead, not a day goes by that Willie doesn't ask himself this question. He turns to the next page of the scrapbook, knowing he should stop. He should get home. Sharon will worry if he doesn't at least call. He will call. From downstairs, he will call. She's right. He's very dependable. But he doesn't stop just yet. The headline over the photo showing the charred skull of the house on Benefit Street is from the Los Angeles Times. Three of Danbury 12 die in East L.A. Police speculate murder-suicide pact. Only Fiegler, Gerber, unaccounted for. Except the cops believed Carol, at least, was dead. The piece made that clear. At the time, Willie had also been convinced it was so, all that blood. Now, however, dead or alive, alive or dead. Sometimes his heart whispers to him that the blood doesn't matter, that she got away from that small frame house long before the final acts of insanity were committed there. At other times, he believes what the police believe, that she and Fiegler slipped away from the others only after the first shootout, before the house was surrounded, that she either died of wounds suffered in that shootout or was murdered by Fiegler because she was slowing him down. According to this scenario, the fiery girl with the blood on her face and the sign in her hand is probably now just a bag of bones, cooking in the desert somewhere east of the sun and west of Tonopah. Willie touches the photo of the burned-out house on Benefit Street, and suddenly a name comes to him, the name of the man who maybe stopped Dong Ha from becoming another Me Lai or My Key. Slocum. That was his name, all right. It's as if the blackened beams and broken windows have whispered it to him. Willie closes the scrapbook and puts it away, feeling at peace. He finishes squaring up what needs to be squared up in the offices of Midtown Heating and Cooling, then steps carefully through the trap door and finds his footing on top of the stepladder below. He takes the handle of his briefcase and pulls it through. He descends to the third step, then lowers the trapdoor into place and slides the ceiling panel back where it belongs. He cannot do anything permanent to Officer Jasper Wheelock. But Slocum could. Yes, indeed, Slocum could. Of course, Slocum was black, but what of that? In the dark, all cats are gray, and to the blind, they're no color at all. Is it really much of a reach from blind Willie Garfield to blind Willie Slocum? Of course not. Easy as breathing, really. Do you hear what I hear? He sings softly as he folds the stepladder and puts it back. Do you smell what I smell? Do you taste what I taste? 5 minutes later, he closes the door of Western States Land Analysts firmly behind him and triple locks it. Then he goes down the hallway. When the elevator comes and he steps in, he thinks, eggnog, don't forget, the Allens and the Dubrays. Also cinnamon, he says out loud. The three people in the elevator car with him look around, and Bill grins self-consciously. Outside, he turns toward Grand Central, registering only one thought as the snow beats full into his face and he flips up his coat collar. The Santa outside has fixed his beard.